And then I look at you and I say, is that Eric Foreman? Hello, everyone, and welcome to another exciting edition of the Brothers Movie Factory. I'm your host, Ben. With me, as always, the brother of the Brothers Movie Factory.
I'm not a bad person. I just have bad luck.
Oh, yeah? You want to elaborate?
I'm the Sandman.
It's like I stubbed my toe today and... And I got into a car crash, and then my wife left me. And you're like, well, I turned into sand. Oh, well, shit, he might have me on that one.
I turned into sand, and...
Now I'm a man made of sand.
I try to use my powers for evil, as opposed to being a good guy and getting rewarded for my deeds.
Could your powers be what the Sandman's powers are and be called anything other than Sandman? Like, is that the only superhero name you'd be allowed to use?
Sandman. I don't want it to be anything else.
Hey, the Man of Sand.
Sandnito.
A sleepy time she comes.
Oh, shit. Prince Valium.
Prince Valium would be good. That'd be real good. Yeah, like Anakin's worst enemy. Like you pit Darth Vader against you pit Darth Vader against Sandman. It's done. It's over. Yeah. He already won. Or Darth Vader gets angrier.
Oh boy, what happens when Sandman gets angrier? He turns into a big old Goliath of sand.
That's true, but I mean, Darth Vader could literally, like, hold all that sand together. He could force lightning it, which actually he never does that, but he could force lightning it, theoretically, and it would turn it all to glass, and they'd be the glass man. Anyways,
Venom shows up. Venom shows up, it's like, you want to kill Vader. I want to kill Vader. What do you say we team up?
And then... I look at you and I say, is that Eric Foreman? Indeed. Joining me as always, Gus, the brother of the Brothers Movie Factory. And here we are back once again for sequels month. Obviously, we've had a very hectic couple of weeks here. As we discussed on the Life Update episode, a lot of things going on with Gus, a lot of things going on with me, especially this week. I won't get into those details, but things got crazy this week for me as well. So we are just kind of running with it. And so sequels month kind of got pushed. It was supposed to be for August. Here we are in September. Just planning on doing four sequel movies. So here we are with our newest sequel month edition of the Brothers Movie Factory. And what we do here on the show is every week we watch a film. We then take to the pod to discuss said film, what we liked about it, what we didn't, what worked, what didn't. Then we submit that movie to the factory. That's where we take the film we just watched, and we imagine what it would look like if it came out today. Who would direct it? Who would compose it? Who would star? Same film, same story, just modern booking for a modern audience. However, sometimes we switch it up. Sometimes we do an animated film and imagine what it would look like live, baby, live. Or maybe we do an 80s film or a 90s film or a 70s film. Sometimes we do modern film and imagine what it would look like as a 90s, 80s, 70s, 60s, etc. If it were to come out way back when. So here we are into sequels month. Last sequel we did was what? What was the last sequel we did there, fella?
We did Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2, Secret of the Ooze. Go check it out. And here we are diving back into the Sam Raimi Spider-Man universe. And, you know, it was the first Spider-Man movie was our second episode we ever did on the show. Last year, during sequel month, we tackled Spider-Man 2 and kind of did a redemption episode because... We both weren't too happy with our original movie factory of Spider-Man.
And that was your fault, because you were in the worst shape you've ever been for any of these episodes of podcasts for that one.
Maybe. There was...
had one too many web shooters.
Yeah, that's true. But then there was the episode, Star Wars Episode 1, Phantom Menace, when I was concussed the entire episode.
Good.
But...
And it wasn't even like you hit your head. The movie just concussed you. Indeed. It's like, are you an angel? And you're like, my head hurts.
Spider-Man 3. we're not gonna do a traditional movie factory. Yeah, yet again, we've already done that for this franchise. So I'm thinking when it comes time to factory this piece, Spider-Man 3, we're talking about the Sandman, right? Is there any other name for someone with sand powers?
Lyle.
We're gonna factory like a new supervillain. Instead of the Sandman, what would he be? What other kind of man would he be?
Are you saying like he could have different powers? Or are you saying
like the Mud Man or
that's called Clayface.
Yeah, exactly. So we'll dive into the factory later, but in the meantime, we need to talk about 2007's Spider-Man 3, a very divisive. It splits people. Some divisive. People like this movie. People like this movie. Some people hate this movie. Some people regard it as one of the worst sequels ever, one of the worst superhero movies ever. And then there's people in between. And then there's people like me who unapologetically love.
And the funny thing is there are people that are like, oh, that's one of the worst movies ever made, or that's one of the worst sequels ever made. That's such a broad brush to paint with that is, you know, there are so many. You tell me, like, The Exorcist 2 is one of the, like, better than this, or, like, you know, there's a lot of different movies or sequels that are worse than this. And this, I think the reason that a lot of people don't like this one is it's such a departure, in a sense, from the other two, where the other two are very pure Spider-Man, like, it has very pure Spider-Man feels to the, I don't know, the comic book fan, whereas this one definitely has feels of corporate greed and studio interference, and it has feels of that, which is, I mean, true, too, behind the scenes, a lot of interference from Sony, but it still has a lot of charm. It still has a lot of good in it. It's just there's a lot of things that it's the weakest of the three, and it's very easily you can sit down, watch this movie, and easily say it's the weakest of the trilogy. Yeah,
it's not a bad movie, it just has bad luck.
Yeah. It just had a lot of studio interference.
Yeah, you know, at this point the Spider-Man movies were huge, some of the biggest, you know, grossing movies of all time. In fact, Spider-Man 3 was the highest grossing movie of 2007, which is interesting to think of it as a failure. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But, well, that happens, though. Because, like, The Last Jedi did very well, and people still consider it, like, a failure. Or, mm-hmm. you know, Force Awakens did very well, but people are still like, eh. Yeah, I don't know.
You know, this one feels more in the vein of maybe that, maybe like a Last Jedi, where, like, I still see it as a good movie, but there's some things I just didn't like in it, or like things that didn't work, maybe. And we'll just get right to the nitty gritty. One of the biggest studio interferences of this film was the inclusion of the character Venom. Okay, Venom, arguably the most popular Spider-Man foe, and arguably one of the more popular comic book characters. So it only naturally made sense to put that character into one of these Spider-Man movies. Sam Raimi didn't connect with Venom, didn't really get Venom, felt he was a little lacking in humanity, and it just didn't feel he was an interesting character that he wanted to play with. He wanted to play with Sandman. He wanted to play with the Lizard. Things like that. But the studio's like, now we're putting Sandman in here. So And on top of
you
that,
mean Venom?
Venom.
I was like, he wanted to work with Sandman, and the studio's like, no, we're putting Sandman in this. He's like, oh shit.
No. No, what?
No, Lloyd.
So he got Venom, he got Sandman, and he got the new Goblin. So in the previous movies, you had Green Goblin, singular villain. Second one, Dr. Octopus, singular villain. How do you up the ante? Put three villains. And this movie just felt a little stretched and bloated. Right? It's also the longest of the three, which is fine. But it just felt like it had a lot to say and not enough time to say it.
Yeah.
And Venom, it kind of comes at a cost, because the character of Venom kind of feels like shoehorned in there. And they didn't execute him the best either, or the most familiar. Like, if he's one of the more popular comic book characters of the time, why depart from what he was? The Tom Hardy movie, which came out in 2018, that's a little more accurate to what people are looking for. A little bit more.
Yeah.
Especially in the looks department. But not Topher Grace, Eric Foreman.
Even more so, though, on top of that, like, it introduced a lot of villains, and there's bloat in that sense with the villains. There's also bloat in the character sense, too, because Venom and Eddie Brock are almost two entirely different characters, in a sense, because you get the first half of the movie with Eddie Brock, and then you get the end of Eddie Brock when he's Venom. They're a little different. You had Gwen Stacy in this movie. You have to also pay attention to MJ. You have to pay attention to Aunt May. You got to pay attention to Peter. You got to pay attention to Harry. You got to pay attention to Sandman, Sandman's daughter. You got, you know, there's a lot of other characters introduced and or given time in this movie. I heard a thing that said this was almost stretched into two parts, or it was originally thought of to be stretched into two parts.
They originally, it was discussed that maybe this movie would be broken up into two movies.
I don't know. Because then if they would have broken it up into two movies, I probably would have rather it been like the first movie introduces like the same way, like Venom gets introduced, he gets his powers, but he doesn't show up, and maybe he fights Sandman and needs Harry to help him, like the same as in this movie, to beat Sandman, and then they go toe to toe with Venom in the next movie, maybe, and Harry maybe dies early on in that or something like that, and that's like it's a revenge tour kind of deal. I don't know. I think it would benefit from giving itself more time, because there is after two movies of Peter and MJ and the relationship stuff and everything like that, introducing Gwen Stacy as a like potential love triangle was unnecessary, to say the least. It would have been better if they would introduce that in the second movie, just so that it could come full circle in this movie. But the second movie is damn near perfect in terms of storytelling. So, you know, there was no need for her. This is the same for a lot of things in this movie.
Perhaps. And
you just like Bryce Dallas Howard, so don't you dare just shill it.
I like everything about this movie. Even the things I say I don't like, I can't help it. I like this movie a lot. I like this movie. I'll say it live. I like this movie more than I like any of the MCU Spider-Man movies.
Yeah, because you're a shill. You're a bad person.
If I was a shill, I would say I love the Marvel movies so much better.
No, you're a Raimi shill. You're a Toby shill.
Maybe that.
You're a Toby shill. Toby real quick, and the whole reason we chose this film this week was because of the trailer getting released, the new trailer. Did you see that the meme that was like Toby confirmed for Spider-Man No Way Home, and it's like the scene at the end of the commercial where Doc Ock comes out and says hello Peter, and then he gets hit by a car, and it's that video, like paparazzi video of Tobey Maguire when he's like screaming at the paparazzi to move. He hits him with his car. It's very well edited.
There is a little Easter egg that they're pointing out, which is, I believe, the last shot of that trailer where Spider-Man not Spider-Man, Peter Parker, Tom Holland, is on top of the car. He's in a suit and he kind of gets in the Spider-Man pose, right?
Yeah, but he's in the same jacket.
He's in the same suit and everything as Tobey Maguire is in this movie, Spider-Man 3. So a lot of people are speculating that they CGI'd Tobey Maguire's face out. I don't know. Part of that, too, that theory is Dr. Octopus is saying, like, hello, Peter, and then it cuts to that shot. Those shots aren't even in the same fucking scene.
Yeah. I was having an argument with a buddy of mine the other day, and he was like, do you think Doc Ock's going to be a good guy in this? Because I think he is. And I was like, nah, I don't think so. And I was like, he hasn't watched Loki yet or anything like that. And he was getting like angry with me. And tell me if I was in the wrong. Tell me if I was in the wrong in this argument. He said that. And I was like, no, I mean, I think if you watch like Loki or anything like that, it could be a variant, but it also could be like he was plucked from the timeline of Spider-Man 2 before the end of the movie. So he's like still evil. And he's just like, yeah, but Alfred Molina said that he's playing the same Doc Ock, so he wouldn't be a different Doc Ock. I'm like, yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, he could be plucked from the timeline because... And he's like, well, that's why I think he's a good guy, because at the end of Spider-Man 2, he became a good guy. I'm like, yeah, he also died. But then he was...
He dies minutes after becoming a good guy.
Yeah, and I was like, and in the trailer, he was like, Alfred Molina said that he was... That's like that was his big point. Alfred Molina said he was playing the same character, the same Doc Ock, and I was like, well, in the trailer, his tentacles are red, and that means he's a bad guy. And he's like, in a very condescending tone, he's like, well, you do know they change things in trailers all the time to trick you, like you're being stupid about it. I'm like, well, you do know actors don't necessarily have to tell you the truth when they're doing interviews about an upcoming movie, right? Like, it's. Exactly. It wouldn't make, in my head, I don't know why people want him to be a good guy so bad. Like, he's one of the biggest bads. Just let him be a big bad.
Yeah. You know, it would kind of make me a little giddy if, like, at the end of Spider-Man 2, he sacrifices himself to save the city by destroying his creation. He will not die a monster. And you see that last shot of him, like, drowning in the lake. What if he gets plucked from that moment and he gets, like, I don't know, revitalized somehow, and he's kind of like got bonked on the head, and instead of forgetting that he's good, he forgets that he's good and remembers himself being bad. Quite the opposite to what Harry Osborn went through throughout this movie, where he is bad. He's the new villain. He's the new goblin. He's going to kill Spider-Man and don the goblin gear. But during a pretty cool fight scene, I say, they tussle, and Harry gets bonked on the head, gets like amnesia in a sense, loses his short-term memory, and forgets that he's bad. So he's like back to being Peter's best friend.
Best friends. yeah, I mean, I am obviously very curious to see what they do with the upcoming movie, and that's where we found our way to Spider-Man 3. And yeah, I mean, that's what's interesting about this movie is, you know, it starts pretty quickly into the action with Peter going up against Harry in a very, very CGI fight. Not even CGI, very green-screened fight for the era.
It's pretty CGI'd, too.
yeah, so it's a little rough. It didn't age well.
To a degree.
If you're being critical of it, which you're not.
Yeah.
If you're being critical of it, it did not age well.
You're right, but it's not that.
You're sitting there watching Dragonheart, and you're like, God damn it, is that a real dragon?
What do you mean it's not a real dog?
Yeah.
It's so real.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, but it's not that bad. There are some shots, especially in the final, near the final fight in this movie, that are pretty bad, but I don't know. I get bothered by bad CGI, but this isn't that bad.
You were sitting it's there magical. Like watching Black Panther when it came out, and you're like, there's just awful CGI at the beginning. I was like, I watched it, I'm like, yeah, it's not that bad. It's bad by Marvel standards.
Here's the difference. That movie came out in 2021. It was ready last year, so 2020. This movie came out in 2007 when they're still like pioneering special effects.
Wait, so, and Black Panther? Black Panther didn't come out in 2020.
I heard Black Widow.
No, I was saying Black Panther.
Ah, okay.
I was going to say, I was like, Black Panther.
Same. Black Panther came out, what, 2018?
Just about, yeah.
Yeah. And, yeah. So, over a decade after Spider-Man 3.
Phantom Menace came out in 1999. Still, perfect.
No, that's pretty bad, too.
No. But
regardless.
Liar!
Yeah. We've established that I unapologetically love this movie, even the things I don't like. So,
indeed, I mean, but that's what I'm getting at, though. I guess it starts with this big fight, or pretty early on, starts with this big fight between Harry and Spider-Man, Peter, and it kind of leads to this neat story of, you know, I don't know, him rekindling this friendship with Harry that didn't necessarily need rekindled. It's almost like Peter has a sense of dramatic irony where he knows everything that's like transpired and Harry doesn't, which is very interesting in terms of storytelling elements. And then they introduce Sandman, and I think really Sandman is the strongest part of this movie overall.
I concur.
Thomas Hayden Church, correct? I'm not messing his name up. His three names.
Lyle from the Jungle.
Wife and I were watching, looking for a movie to watch the other day, and she's like, "You ever watch George of the Jungle?" I'm like, "Yeah, well, I used to watch it all the time." And she's like, "You want to watch it and see if it's any good?" I'm like, "Sure." It's not that good.
That's a liar.
It's not that good. It's
Ursula, I found your scrunchie.
It's pretty rough. Help! He like rubs berries on himself, make it look like he's bleeding.
This is great.
He's good. And Brendan Fraser's good.
You wouldn't get it.
I wouldn't get it. But yeah, I mean, it's he puts in a phenomenal performance. He's a really conflicting character in terms of his motives. He's a good villain. He would have been a great singular villain if they could cut everything away. I mean, he is still pretty good. But if they could have
focused more time.
Yeah. Cut all the Venom stuff. Hell, if you cut the Venom stuff, would you even need the black suit Spider-Man stuff? Which is like the central conflict of the movie. Truly.
Yeah. I feel like you don't need Venom himself. You could have saved it. Like lead off into like another movie, but I really, especially this most recent viewing, really liked that whole dilemma, the whole black suit Spider-Man, and the kind of the metamorphosis of Peter, the struggling of his character internally, and
this is something else.
Yeah, it really clicked with me this time. And I remember back when this came out and you see the black suit Spider-Man, I was a little upset the look of the suit, right?
It really doesn't change much. It's just black now.
Yeah, it's just black. And like even all the details are the same. Whereas in like the comics and the old cartoon, it looks like a different suit altogether. But this time I got it. Like it made more sense to me. And in a way, Peter himself is...
Did you say Peter?
Peter himself is the main antagonist of this movie. Main antagonist. He is kind of battling with... Would the correct word be like hubris? He's battling with his own ego, in a sense. You see him throughout. Like now he's being celebrated. Now he's being appreciated. Spider-Man is. And he kind of lets that get to his head. And to the point where it's affecting his relationships. It's affected his relationship overall with Harry. Not the ego part, but being Spider-Man. And it has certainly affected his relationship with, you know, the love of his life, Mary Jane Watson. to the point where she is going through troubles of her own and can't confide in him anymore, because the only way he can relate to her isn't by relating to her, is by talking about himself and what he's going through as Spider-Man. And that's what I really liked about the black suit, the symbiote alien that basically attaches to negative energy and amplifies it. So now Peter is struggling with himself, and it's amplified. What does that look like? And we get it. It looks like emo Peter Parker, and he talks like, I don't know, he's from the 1940s. And he's going to rub some dirt in your eye.
Now dig on this.
Yeah. And you know what's funny? And this is another thing like that kind of clicked for me. I've always loved it when he's like the way he talks and, you know, whispers in women's ear, like, get us some shade. And that great scene of him walking down the street, you know, pointing at all the ladies and just snapping his fingers and going shopping and dancing. People will say that scene is so stupid. It probably makes them feel uncomfortable.
So they feel it's stupid.
Yeah, but that's the point. You're supposed to feel uncomfortable. You're supposed to feel like this is so strange and weird and almost embarrassing. Because that's what his character is kind of going through. He doesn't even know who he is anymore. And it's being amplified.
I don't even be around anymore.
he's got too much shit on him. And I just really dug on that, even more so this most recent viewing, and just the internal struggle that Peter is going through, and he needs forgiveness, so he seeks religion, sort of.
Kinda, yeah. What I was saying though, I guess what led into that though is, so you would, if you cut Venom from the movie, because all in all, very unnecessary. Mm-hmm. I mean, truthfully, unnecessary.
Character of Venom, yes.
Character of Venom
and the black suit Spider-Man, I say, is very necessary.
Okay.
For the story they were trying to tell.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You could have told it without him, becoming a complete dick. It could have been more just everything you said could have theoretically been done without the symbiote though too. He's talking about himself. They just have to amp it up a little bit.
Yeah, but now you got a visual. Now you got why I really enjoyed the suit being the way it is. It's the same suit, same look. It's just black.
Yeah,
gray tone. So you get a visual difference, not just like an emotional one or verbal one. It's definitely just something to for the audience to latch on to, but you know, in a sense he's bad, so you gotta make him look more villainous, and it makes him more powerful too, and it increases his desire for revenge. It just pushes him past what regular Spider-Man would have done. So I think it's necessary. I definitely do. For what the story they're trying to tell, I think it makes it more interesting.
Yeah. And
the way it's executed, I don't know. That's a different story.
And Sandman was just, I mean, he, like I say, I think he is, if they would have focused more on him, eliminated Venom, you could still have the true central conflict of Peter dealing with his own issues. I've heard the argument before that you could eliminate Sandman and just do pretty much just Peter dealing with his own issues and having to deal with Harry. And it's like between him and Harry, they're the villains of the movie. Or he's the villain and they're fighting, which would have been good as well because it would have come full circle from the first movie.
Yeah, and it does. And that's a tough question because you're not wrong. It definitely makes it a more interesting movie because, I mean, the Sandman isn't the most rich character, right? What they portrayed in this movie, you could have put in a little more time, but at least like with, I guess what they were going to portray throughout the story and like the conflict Sandman brings, whether it's internally or physically towards Spider-Man. You can't do much more than that, right? So if you had just him as the villain and you didn't have the things going on with Harry, or even if you didn't have like the black suit Spider-Man, I don't think it would have been strong enough. But if it was just like you mentioned, like some people are saying, just what Peter's going through and Harry, I think that would have been strong enough, like rich enough, like storytelling wise. Because Sandman's really just a physical villain, but I think he has a very rich, beautiful, you know, story throughout this movie. And we had already said, like, I think Sandman's the best part of this movie.
Yeah, they unnecessarily try to make him more antagonizing than he is. Like, tie him to Peter to give an emotional, like, they didn't need to do that. It could have been more, he's a bad guy, Spider-Man's the good guy, you know, they're clashing over that.
Yeah.
I mean, they do that in anime all the time.
Spoiler alert, but yes, they do retcon their own series. They change Uncle Ben's killer to Marco Flint, the Sandman.
Which really doesn't make any sense. It's a very unnecessary change. It didn't need to be there. Like, that's one of the most... a movie that has several unnecessary things in it, that might be the most unnecessary to me.
Well... maybe. But you're right. A movie that has already too much, they throw in something like that. Now, it does something for Peter Parker's character, who's already going through a lot of...
That's the issue I have.
...turmoil. Yeah, and it adds something now for him to, like, seek revenge and just amplifies his ugliness, you know, his curse that's going to come with this black suit Spider-Man. But yeah, I didn't dig that. Never really did. It feels a little cheap.
Yeah. It's the equivalent of a cheap pop.
Under the bus.
Yeah. They're like, how can it, or you not throwing him under the bus, throwing his face into a train.
it felt like a way to try to put him over as a bigger heel.
Yeah, and it didn't for how the movie ends with how his payoff is, like what ultimately Sandman's payoff is set up. The fact that he kills Uncle Ben, I guess the message would be like a forgiveness to a degree and everything like that. But at the same time, it makes him almost too evil, where he could have just been a bad guy who's not really a bad guy, just has bad luck. He's doing bad things so he can support his daughter and different things like that. I mean, that would have been better than cheaply trying to insert him into the story. They're like, oh, shit, how do we tie him into this story? Well, let's do this. You know, let's say he killed Uncle Ben. Like, that's unnecessary. Yeah. They could have just done it where he's the bad guy and... he's trying to rob banks. Spider-Man gets in his way. Spider-Man is preventing him from helping his daughter. Therefore, he's going to stop Spider-Man. You know, like, it's as easy as that. It didn't need to. Sometimes they complicate things a little too much. I mean, like Thanos. Sure. People consistently say, like, oh, Thanos is one of the best, like, villains we've seen in, like, a superhero movie. And that's true. But part of that is because his plan is fairly simple, and they did a good job explaining, like, you can almost, like, see his side of it, and that could have been Sandman, where it's like, yeah, he's evil, yes, he's doing bad things, but you can sympathize with him because you can see where he's coming from.
We're in agreement that we just didn't really care for Marco Flint Sandman being now retconned as the killer of Ben Parker. Okay.
Yeah.
Uncle Ben.
It was Bonesaw.
But, yeah, that would have been better. No, but...
Bonesaw was so angry, he went out and killed Spider-Man's uncle.
What is not necessary. It's just used as a tool for, I guess, finishing Peter Parker's story arc throughout this film. Is this allows the like the whole reason he pursues being Spider-Man is because of the death of his uncle and the final message he takes with him from his uncle, which is great power comes great responsibility. So through the death of his uncle, it caused him to pursue being Spider-Man. And now he's confronted with the person who ignited that, the person who accidentally killed his uncles, as we're defined. And Sandman explains what happened, and Peter is able to forgive him. I forgive you, is what he says.
Peter.
So, yeah. So, Peter
Anytime you say it,
Parker,
you have to say it that way.
Peter is struggling with ego and selfishness. So, this is kind of like the conclusion, or not the conclusion of that arc, but he's able to, think of someone other than himself. He's not motivated by revenge anymore. He forgives that person.
He says,
And then
just give me a
ultimately,
chance.
yeah, he resolves that. He resolves his issues with Harry in their final moments, which we'll touch on in a bit. And then, which I love, the final shot of this movie is he resolves, or he kind of, asks for forgiveness and apologizes in a way without words to Mary Jane, who he had neglected and abused, in fact, throughout this story, by offering his hand to her and dancing. And yeah, I love the way this movie ends, truly.
Yeah, I
So, yeah.
mean, we touched on Sandman. We'll touch more on Harry and Venom here in a second. And I think that the movie overall, the way it just had so many things to tie up by the end that it can feel like a lot.
It does.
When it didn't need to feel that way. I mean, 'cause as you said, we have Sandman. We kind of concluded what his story arc was all about. We talked about Peter's arc, Harry's arc. He has been building for three movies, and it culminates in this movie, or two movies, and it culminates in this movie rather. And you have him fighting, losing his memory, kind of rekindling his relationship with Peter, rekindling his relationship with Mary Jane, bringing them all three back together, so to speak. And then the thing I never really understood, and I didn't understand it still, is did Harry's butler not realize that he was becoming, like, in the second movie or the third movie? Like, did he not ever think to be like, by the way, your dad, it was he his blades. Like, why didn't he say it earlier? Did he not? I never understood that. Like, why not just tell him earlier than just letting him bubble and stew over Spider-Man?
There are many things I've never spoken of that have happened in this house.
Like your
You
father
call
grooming all those women.
yeah. Your father, Harry, doing what he wanted to those women and then grooming them fast.
Always carving the turkey really maniacally.
We call this a plot hole.
Yeah, I know. And it's pretty. Again, that's the thing, is there's several things in this movie that are like semi like not unforgivable is very strong, but like you can't really. There's no way around it, so to speak.
Yeah, it's one of those deals too. Like, it's a movie, and they're gonna just tell the story they tell, right? And we as viewers, we just take it, and then backseat directing, we could be like, they should have done like this, or why didn't they do that? But this, especially the relationship between Harry and Peter in the fall, like 2 and 3, it could have been resolved over a conversation,
Yeah. Like,
And same
hey,
with what you're saying about Bernard.
I didn't kill your dad. I don't care.
That's kind of what it's getting at. It's like Harry is just so blinded by hate And Peter is so blinded by basically keeping his identity. And he even says to Harry, because he, you know, Peter doesn't, Harry doesn't know that Peter's Spider-Man until the conclusion of Spider-Man 2. And he even says, like, we can resolve what you and I have going on later. And then they do ultimately in 3, right?
Yeah.
But, yeah, so Harry is just so motivated by blind revenge. And Peter does attempt to tell him in the beginning of this movie, but he just doesn't listen. So it's only when they're at their most desperate, when Harry is fully defeated and Peter comes to him for help. And it just allows for that whole story arc to also come full circle. And that's when it's convenient for Bernard to tell the truth, what Harry refused to maybe hear before. But
it's a little
convenient.
Yeah, very convenient, which is kind of what this movie has going for it. A lot of conveniences, like Venom. The symbiote, these are the coincidences. Like you said, it's very convenient, very coincidental. Symbiote comes on a meteor. Just happens that meteor lands right next to them in the park?
Central Park.
Yeah, it just happens. That's a big park. They're just chilling there at the time when this meteor... I mean, sure, I get it. The movie can happen. It could happen that way. But the fact that it comes like right to Spider-Man, of all people, in one of the biggest cities in the world. Interesting. Secondly,
speaking of convenience with that, originally they were going to have a more, what do you call it? Fuck, I can't remember the word. Like, more based on the comic where a space shuttle returns to Earth and the symbiote just basically hitched a ride. They were going to have that in this film, but they felt with everything going on in this movie, that would have been too much. So they just did what they did and just have it conveniently land right next to Peter.
What, the astronaut was MJ's.
Yeah.
They could have made him Venom instead of Eddie Brock and it would have been better.
Yeah. They actually were planning on doing that. I don't know about that part of it, but they were going to have, James Jameson, be the astronaut who returned in the shuttle.
Yeah.
So
that, like, it almost would have made more sense. That would have made more sense. Also would have made more sense if, like, the meteor came and caused, like, hit a building and Spider-Man went to, like, save people and that's how it, like, came into contact with them, you know? Easy as that. So that was very convenient. Also convenient, all the churches in New York City. And Eddie Brock just happens to be there, in the same place.
Call it fate, karma.
Sure. The movie has a lot of things that are very convenient throughout.
A lot of convenient plot devices.
Yes,
sure.
And ultimately, it makes this one the worst in the trilogy. I enjoy it, enough. I mean, I think it's my least favorite. The first one's actually, I do this with a lot of movies, as you know. Even if the sequel is better, which I think Spider-Man 2 is better, I enjoy watching Spider-Man 1 more. Same with, like, Star Wars. Like, Empire is a better film, but I like New Hope the best, you know. So do that with a handful, like Jaws 2. Yeah. Jaws 2, better movie, right? Jaws 1, though.
You know, Spider-Man 3 is definitely my least favorite of the three Raimi Spider-Man movies. However, I honestly think it's the one I've seen the most over the last, since all these movies have come out. It would be that or Yeah, it's probably that one.
I have a theory about why that might be, and this is just based on my own viewing habits of just movies in general, and you can maybe back this up. I'm not sure.
I could tell you why. A big part of it is I saw it. I was at an age where I started like going to the movies with my own money, so I got to choose what I went and saw. So I saw this movie a couple times in the theater, and then we got on DVD. At this point, I was like real into DVDs and watching them on repeat and all the bonus features and falling asleep to movies. I also don't know if you remember, but for about a year, I lived with our grandmother most weekdays.
Yes.
And I would bring movies from home to watch at her place because she didn't really have TV. And one particular week, I only brought Spider-Man 3, and I probably watched it like 8 times that whole week.
Yeah. So. I was going to say, just based on my own viewing habits, a lot of the movies that I watch personally, like when I have time or maybe if I don't have time, are movies that I don't necessarily like want to it sounds worse than it is, but like don't want to give them like my full attention, so to speak. Like, if I watch Jaws, I want to watch Jaws. If I watch Star Wars, I want to watch Star Wars. Like, I want to pay attention, not text, not do anything else. But, like, if I watch Spider-Man, same thing. If I watch Spider-Man 2, same thing. If I watch this one, I'm fine to do some stuff while I'm doing, like, watching it. Like, I'm fine to do some work. And it's, like, one of those movies where it's not like I don't have to pay full attention to it to feel good about it.
Yeah, and I feel that. Like the Studio Ghibli movies. Those are my favorite movies. I mean, collectively. That's just end of sentence.
Yeah.
But I don't watch them all the time. They're more like event movies.
Yeah.
So like each of them I might watch every several years, to be honest. Like Castle in the Sky is my favorite movie of all time. I probably haven't watched that movie in close to 4 years.
Yeah. But you watched this movie last year.
Yeah, I watch this movie all the time. Doesn't mean I like it more. I don't see it as it is like a spectacle movie, but it's not like an emotional event movie for me. I do get emotional while watching this movie, but I don't know. It's a weird. I have a weird headspace when it comes to a movie watching. I'm sure, and I'm the same way. I think you've told me that about Princess Mononoke. You don't watch all the time because you want to keep it kind of special.
Yeah, I haven't watched Rocky. Rocky is my Rocky and Princess Mononoke are my two favorites. I haven't watched Rocky in 4 years. Because last time I watched it was at my first apartment in Pittsburgh. So in four years, I haven't watched Rocky. Princess Mononoke. I tend to watch that every year, but I've actually haven't seen it since we saw it in theaters, and I think that was
2019.
Yeah, I was gonna say I think that's 3 or 4 years ago. I mean, hell, how many movies do I need to watch right now? Like that are new or worth watching? There's a lot of movies that are better, and I find myself watching Major Pain instead, which is as the older I get, the better that movie gets. Like.
Same with Spider-Man 3. So it's a fine wine. I had a buddy, I mentioned to him, started watching Spider-Man 3. He's like, I haven't seen that in a long time. Does it hold up? I'm like, yes. Does it hold up? I'm like, did it ever hold up? Like, people don't like this movie.
You'd watch up to, you'd walk up, if Spider-Man 3 was a person, you'd walk up, shake their hand, and be like, that's a mighty fine handshake you got there. You want to wrestle?
Sure. Is this a Major Pain line?
Yeah, you don't remember that one?
I haven't seen Major Pain.
The counselor walks up and introduces herself, and he's like, that's a mighty fine handshake you got there. You want to wrestle? He smiles real big.
That's good stuff.
That movie has a lot of great lines.
Can you guess?
been 2 weeks since I killed a man.
Can you guess which parts in this movie make me cry. There's two.
There's two, but give me three guesses. First one, 100%, when Harry dies and they're having their talk, and he goes, "Harry." That's definitely it.
Yeah, I cry hard.
Then the next two. All right, this is where. So don't tell me if I get it right on the first try, but I'll try. The first one, my first guess is when Sandman is forming for the first time. I think the music probably gets you. The second one is when Sandman disappears at the end. Because you're still fresh on the sentiment of Harry.
And Harry actually happens.
That's
right
after. It's after. Yeah. So you're prepping for the sentiment of Harry. But I'm assuming it's when Sandman forms.
That is correct.
And the music gets you.
No, not even that. I mean, it does. It's a whole flood of emotions of that scene. But I, even though it's a little dated CGI, I am so impressed by the individual grains of sand that it starts with that start rolling and forming. And it becomes like a wave of sand. And then it's just start, like he's forming himself. He's like trying to figure out.
It's just a man of sand. It's a Sandman.
And that music that plays, and it's just so tragic. And he like grabs the lock. He like goes to get the locket of his daughter's picture, and he can't grab it. And he gets like so angry. And then he like forms a hand and grabs it. It's just the whole like symphony of that scene. I think it's so beautiful. It gets me emotional.
Yeah,
it really does.
What doesn't get me emotional is everything to do with Topher Grace's Venom. What's interesting is Eric Foreman, That 70s Show, is like one of the most like likable characters on like TV history to me. And he is a dick from time to time, very jealous.
Yeah, he's
dick.
A bit of a dicky, jealousy, weaselly kind of guy.
Yeah, but he's definitely
the Ross of that show.
Yeah, but he's also very enjoyable and likable in that show. Now we come to him in really any movie I've seen him in. He usually plays like an over-exaggerated dick. And I don't know if that's just because that's what he's good at, or if maybe that's how he is in real life. But I know that isn't, because I've read interviews and stuff that people say he's a very nice person. But I think of like, I just watched Ocean's 11. He has a cameo in that movie. I don't know if you remember that or not, but he's a dick in that movie. Very stupid dick in that movie. Just rewatched Predators last year. He's in Predators. Same feel in that movie. And he's just such an asshole in this movie, and a cocky, arrogant person. It does not make sense. His casting doesn't make sense. It would have made more sense if like it would have the Venom symbiote would have looked more like Venom, gotten all bulky like it is in the Venom movies, because I think in the new Venom movies, Tom Hardy's a big man, but the symbiote makes him even bigger. He's like not Hulk sized, but more hulked up. Yeah, I don't like that it's just a form fitting design for Venom, because he doesn't look like Venom at all. And so his character, it does a good job at making you not like him. But then, because he's very weaselly, because he's very bratty, it almost makes you not... He's almost not intimidating at all. He's annoying throughout, but I almost don't find him intimidating.
Yeah. And that's why I think it was a bad choice, because they now have the Venom villain, they have the Sandman villain, who is the muscle villain. And that's what Venom is. He's a more physical threat. He has a lot of abilities, not just punching, but so Sandman. I mean, my god, he can basically turn into anything.
Yeah.
So you basically had two heavies as the villain, but they made the Venom villain, as you said, they portrayed him differently. And that was probably an act of choice to contrast with the Sandman. But I think it was a poor choice. I can't connect with that Venom at all. He feels thrown in. He has about like maybe 10 minutes of screen time. It just feels unnecessary. Doesn't need to be there.
It's not even too. It's isn't the symbiote doesn't even like Because in the comics and in the Venom movies, the symbiote has a mind of its own. And needs to, like, feed on people and do different things. And the symbiote in this movie is a lot different in that it's like him in complete control of the symbiote, so to speak. I mean, it enhances his rage. It's more like he's possessed to a degree, but he knows, like, he wanted to kill Peter anyways. So it's not like he's... It's like he got amped up. It's basically like he just got a superpower and that's it. It's not Venom. It's just some guy who got a superpower.
Yeah, exactly. And he's more of like an amoeba or a barnacle of sorts. He just, like, this thing latches on and kind of feeds on negative energy but gives powerful energy in return.
Yeah, which I don't...
Negative, powerful negative energy. Which is true to, you know, the comics and things.
Yeah, but it just doesn't work the way it's portrayed in this movie.
Nah, it doesn't.
I don't even necessarily like how they're portraying Venom in the Venom movies. Not to a degree. It's almost comical. A little too comical for me, where I feel like he should be, like, evil.
Did you even see that movie?
Venom? Yeah, I saw Venom. I watched it.
Okay.
Yeah, it's okay. And Carnage looks good. It seems like it might be darker.
My problem comes elsewhere. I don't like to see... I'm not, like, a follower of the stories, but just in general, I don't like to see my Venom as, like, an anti-hero.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. I want more of that. Like, I see in no way, shape, or form, unless Tom Hardy's Eddie Brock, like, the symbiote gets full control of him. And becomes, like, a full-time evil person, I could, like... That's what I see no way out of this. Where, like, Venom becomes, like, just a full-on bad guy. You know? Because as long as Tom Hardy... Unless it does happen like that, where Venom, the symbiote, gets full control and just uses him as a host body.
We'll have to see in the multiverse madness.
Maybe.
But we can agree that...
It's gonna be Carnage!
I don't know if we can agree on this, but this is what I'll say. I like a lot of ideas in this movie.
Yeah.
A lot of the execution isn't really there.
No.
But I think there's still a lot of good stuff on the surface. We didn't really touch on Mary Jane Watson, but she's going through a lot emotionally, and she adds a lot.
There is some newer stuff with her, but, I mean, at the same time, it's nothing truly new that we haven't seen. She's sad, she's conflicted about a lot of things, and then she's the damsel in distress.
Speaking of things that aren't new for her, all the screams she has in this movie, every single one of them, they were reused screams from previous movies.
They,
like, the sound of it.
They bring her in, and they Sam Raimi said, we had your mind erased. You've done all this before.
Yeah.
It's an eternal sunshine of the slutless mind, the spotless mind.
I take it back. Three tears were shed during this movie. The
breakup dances.
The breakup scene on the bridge, that actually got me. It hurt me.
You pay me rent?
Four times.
Can we talk? She's a peach. His daughter's a peach.
Yeah.
She's peach.
What's her name? Futaba, right?
Yeah. She's peach.
She makes cookies with nuts for him.
Yeah, she's very nice. I remember watching this as a kid and feeling awkward, I guess, because I felt, like, bad for her. Because, like, you could tell she was, like, she really liked him, but at the same time, you're like, it's not going to work out.
Yeah. Mr. Dickovich just wants his rent. Or... Yeah. If you feel that bad about it, you can buy me pizza. Today's good.
Maybe he could fix this goddamn door.
Yeah, that's it. That breakup scene on the bridge, I don't know, like, awakened some PTSD or something, because that got me, like, lip quivering. I'm like, oh, this hurts. I feel so bad for Peter, who's, like, going through... Bear. This is also Cliff Roberts' last film he did, I believe.
Well,
where he played Peter Parker, Ben Parker, one more time.
There it is. And then what, we got Martin Sheen after this?
Yeah, and then a mystery after that.
And no one yet. Maybe they'll introduce a variant Uncle Ben in this movie.
Maybe Tobey Maguire. Maybe Peter Parker just stays.
You know who's going to be variant Uncle Ben? It's Joe Pesci from My Cousin Vinny. Because him and Marissa Tomei are together in that movie.
That's true.
And that's who we're going to have. Uncle Ben was going to be a lawyer named Vinny Ben.
That's factored.
Vinny Parker. He changed his name after the last court case when he saved Ralph Macchio. You ever seen that movie?
Yeah, I've seen
it. Okay, that's great. I didn't like it the first time I watched it because I was like, I was too young. I thought it was a lot funnier the second time I watched it.
Yeah, it's good.
And I was like, is that Marissa Tomei?
Yeah.
Mickey, all right, man. Mickey Rourke. Wait, we can't use him because he was Whiplash.
That's right. Let's say, now that we're talking about factoring a Ben Parker and Uncle Ben and the MCU Spider-Man, what if we jumped back to Spider-Man 3, 2007? You got the Sandman. He's a guy, a criminal on the run. He falls into this like particle accelerator, and he gets transformed into the Sandman. What if there's something else instead of sand down there, and it turned him into some other kind of man? What do you think the Brothers Movie Factory would entail for
this individual? The funny thing with that is like, it's all been done, right? Even in the new MCU movies. The elementals were introduced, and those were all real villains. As water, fire, the wind. So you have all that.
What about Polka Dot Man? Oh, that's been done too.
Yeah, see, and you got like, oh no, it's Lego Man.
Hey, that could hurt.
That would hurt. He just throws Legos all over the ground. You can't. Floor is lava. You can't touch the ground.
You know what's funny is someone skilled at computer graphics could digitally alter every Sandman shot. Instead of sand, it's fucking Lego bricks.
Lego Man. Lego Man would be cool. And when he like forms, he's just a giant like Lego guy.
Yeah.
He's just walking around. He's like a little Emmett from the Lego movie.
Yeah, that'd be good.
He can shoot. He can shoot all the different Legos at you, like fire Legos.
I just keep seeing, like, when he flies through the air, he's just, like, sand catching a breeze. I just see kind of like that Lego stop motion that they use in Lego Movie. Just, like little circle, tiny pieces just flying away.
Yeah, it'd be perfect. It'd be weird. Yeah. It because it'd be, like, stop motion giant Legos floating through the air.
That's way better than my random fucking idea that popped in my head. You were talking about the elementals, and I'm like thinking, I'm like, yeah, what the fuck could, what else could that be? And it just popped in my head. I was like, ah, Booby Man.
Thanks. You could have the T-1000, basically.
Liquid metal.
Liquid metal, yeah. That'd be kind of cool. As like a villain, like not the T-1000 isn't, but like in a superhero movie. That'd be kind of neat.
It was like Sandman's ability, but liquid metal, he'd be a lot more useful.
Frozone! Frozone'd be able to beat him. Easy.
Iceman. I already got that.
He'd look and say, I'm thirsty. What if, real quick, what if in this multiverse, Frozone comes? Like, we got Nick Fury, and then Frozone skates in.
Holy shit.
Yeah, that'd be pretty good.
Madness.
What multiverse
he just
of madness.
What if he just became like a bunch of fucking bats? Is he Batman?
Probably. That would make sense. This is all. Yeah. These are all food for thought. Food for thought on the Brothers Movie Factory.
But definitely Lego Man works.
I think Lego Man would be pretty badass. I think that hero needs or that not that hero, that villain. That villain needs made. You know what's interesting though is. I could be completely wrong. I like this thought popped in my head. Can you think of any other villains? And I'm sure there are. But how many villains have man in their title, like there's Sandman, and then is there any others?
Polka Dot Man,
is he really a, I guess he is a villain, but
Man Bat.
I'm saying more like Man is the ending term, because I'm thinking like there's a lot of heroes. Batman, Spider-Man, Superman, like not is there many villains?
How about Catwoman. I don't
the
know.
The Joker. Precisely, Robin.
Joker Man. I can't think of many, if any, off the top of my head, that end in Man. They're like that's Mr. Negative.
Mr. Negative.
Isn't there Negative Man?
I have another question here, because we could say it forever. We're not going to, but this came to thought as I was saying that. Who from Batman's, because we've always had this discussion, who would win in a fight, Batman versus Spider-Man? You always say Batman, I always say Spider-Man. If you could take one Batman villain and pit him against Spider-Man, who would it be?
Say once more?
If you could take one Batman villain and pit him against Spider-Man, who would it be?
That I think would win?
Not win, just like who would you like to see have like an arc with Spider-Man?
Well, easy answer is always the Joker, right?
I don't know if that's the most fun, though. Because he doesn't have that connect. Joker has like a connection, the yin and yang to Batman. Or Spider-Man, yeah, maybe not so much. The Joker walked up to Uncle Ben and said, "You ever dance with the devil in the pale moonlight?" and then shot him.
Yeah, it turns out it wasn't.
It wasn't any of them. Yes, it was Jack.
Jack Napier. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, the go-tos would be Joker, because I could see him doing something very sinister, very evil, trying to get Spider-Man to break, doing the Killing Joke line where all it takes is one bad day to make someone like him and like kill Aunt May or kill Mary Jane or something like that. But an interesting one, I always really enjoy the Riddler, whether it's in comics or other source material. I don't think they've tapped into how interesting or evil that character could be. The Batman, which comes out next year.
Very excited about that.
Looks like it could be the Riddler I've always wanted to see.
Paul Dano.
Yes. I think it'd be kind of cool, maybe, throwing riddles Spider-Man's way to, like, I don't know, try to just another element to battle and save the day. But as a physical foe, you could say old Clayface. He's kind of like Sandman.
Yeah.
Clay.
I think it would be neat if there was an arc where it was Catwoman and Black Cat and they teamed up.
That wasn't the question you asked at all.
No, it is, because they team up to pull off like a grand heist, and Spider-Man has to beat these top jewel thieves, and they're working together because they're basically the same character, so to speak.
They kind of are.
They're both like jewel thieves, cat burglars.
Indeed.
And yeah, I don't know. I thought that would be interesting, but it's Michelle Pfeiffer's Catwoman, The video game's Black Cat.
You know, speaking of Catwoman, and this will be my last factoid. This will be my last factoid. But Sam Raimi was so disappointed with the critical reception of this film. It wasn't the movie he wanted to make in general. So they were kind of gearing up to do a fourth one. I mean, at the time, they had confirmed they were going to make Spider-Man 4, 5, and 6.
Yes.
Whether they had ideas for them was a different story. But these were big money makers. So the critical reception of 3 was not very good. So Sam Raimi was working on a Spider-Man 4, and he vowed it would be his best film to date and the best Spider-Man film to date. And there's a script for it. It has leaked since, you know, it never was made. But Sam Raimi's Spider-Man 4 was actually going to focus on the Vulture, and played by Ben Kingsley, and the Vultress, who is a made-up character, who is going to be played by Anne Hathaway, who ended up playing Catwoman.
Whoa.
I don't remember much more about the Spider-Man 3. I know I've read, I haven't read the script, but I've read like the overall plot, and it was going to have, you know, Peter going through some emotional issues after the death of his friend Harry and struggling with whether he wants to continue being Spider-Man or not, and kind of getting older as Spider-Man and this and that. So I don't know. I thought it could be
Okay.
interesting.
Yeah. For sure, for sure. But
No Michael
with
Keaton. No Michael Keaton.
no Michael Keaton, with that, why don't we go ahead and close our at? So that is the show, everyone. We hope you enjoyed it. If you liked what you heard, be sure to check us out over on Audioboom. That is our primary site. That's where we're posting to first and subsequently gets shipped out everywhere else. So Spotify, Google Play, iTunes, wherever you find your podcasts, hey, we're there. You can also find us over on Twitter. We are at the Bros Movie Pod. That's where we'll be posting links to the show, clips of the show, and memes that Goss makes, etc., etc. That's at the Bros Movie Pod. You can also find us over on Facebook.
Hey, go to Facebook, type in the Brothers Movie Factory. You'll find us. Click it, like it, share it. I like to make memes for watching each and every week, as well as include links to the things Ben mentioned a moment ago, like Audioboom, Spotify, Twitter, and at.
So that is the show. We hope you enjoyed it. But until next week, brothers.
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 Brothers.